It wasn't just one incident that started the upheaval. Discontent had been gathering for years like dry kindling, so a dispute over a traffic stop and an altercation with police and wild, untrue rumors about police assaulting a pregnant African-American woman were only the tipping point, the spark that led to 3 days of civil disobedience, street violence, and property destruction.
I had never seen a riot before. And there was some question whether this was a riot or a rebellion.
Music entrepreneur Ira Tucker Jr. grew up in the area and has vivid memories of community activism and going to civil rights protests with his family.
But when we saw our parents out there on the line, we knew we were doing the right thing. And it was something that you did with your parents that you never did before, and I don't think since then it's been done either. I mean, to go out on a protest line with your mom and your pop with you, and you're walking around with signs on and protesting something, especially when they built Strawberry Mansion, a high school or middle school, they didn't have any black people working on it at all. And so we went there and protested with bullhorns and laid down in front of tractors and whatever it took.
Along Columbia Avenue, later renamed for civil rights activist Cecil B. Moore, business owners, says Tucker, backed the marches and peaceful protests.
Those were the people who put up the money for the signs, put up the money for us to do whatever we needed to do. When we were in this struggle, people were concerned about a collective cause. It was about trying to make things better. And the overt killing that they have today just did not exist back then. Our focus then was more on trying to improve things.
When the riot started, some of the same stores were looted and destroyed. Columbia Avenue never saw many of those merchants again. And shopping in what was once a thriving corridor of black and Jewish-owned stores nearly disappeared.
And I remember actually being on the porch and hearing about the riot. But Broad Street is almost like a firewall barrier. So if you're on the east side of Broad Street, you're not necessarily... You don't necessarily in the heart of what's going on the west side.
That's Karen Warrington in a 2012 interview. She's an artist, educator, and media personality that has been living in the North Philadelphia Yorktown neighborhood since it was founded in the early 1960s. Yorktown was built over 10 years on 150 acres as part of an urban renewal plan to offer a middle-class neighborhood and home ownership for African-American families. It was like a suburban island in the city.
That rebellion happened as a result of some conflict with police, and there were a number of stores there that subsequently were burned and ravaged. But Yorktown would not have been an object of that kind of reaction because we didn't have stores at all in our community.
Yorktown followed the model of suburban Levittown. Its 650 houses are mostly semi-detached with one-car garage and a small front lawn and community gardens. It's still a thriving community framed by Girard Avenue and Cecil B. Moore and 12th and Broad Street and has mostly remained in the hands of the original buyers. But on the other side of Broad Street, many of the families who were displaced by the 1964 riots relocated to other neighborhoods or stayed in aging buildings. Today, the most visible presence in this part of North Philadelphia is the ever-expanding Temple University. The housing and business needs of the Temple community are driving the economic, cultural, and political dynamics of the area. Elizabeth Perez Luna, WHYY News.